What's up, Yap Squad? And welcome back to another re-yap or recap of The Acolyte. This week, we are going to be talking about episodes 5 and 6. Perfect time to listen and recap with us just before episode 7 drops. Super excited. So, Sawyer, how's it going?
Oh, you know, it's been an interesting week. How about you?
It's been so interesting. Nothing. What you got
that's
there?
That's so weird. Yeah. I don't know. It's like,
That's strange. No reason. For those of you that are listening and not watching our video, we may or may not both have Rey and Kylo figures on the screen for no particular reason at all. But we'll get into that because we're going to talk about the Acolyte, and we have a super awesome guest to talk about it with us. So let's bring her on in and we'll get to chatting.
Hello there.
Thank you so much, Candace, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and where we can find you and what kind of stuff you do?
Yeah, I'm the network producer for the Geeky Waffle. I also co-host Space Waffles, which is their Star Wars podcast. And yeah, just been a Star Wars fan since childhood. Been obsessed.
I love it.
Completely. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're so glad to have you on to talk about these last two episodes because personally for me, they might be two of my favorite episodes of any Star Wars show ever. Not with other critiques, of course. And we'll talk about, you know, the highs and lows. But yeah, so just to start off, with some non-spoilery thoughts, how are we feeling? I think it's interesting for us because we're only covering two episodes at a time. I feel like my thoughts after episode 5 would probably be different than they are now with the added knowledge of episode 6. Because I feel like we got not a huge like plot push forward in episode 6, but we got a lot of like character stuff, which I love. It's my favorite. So how we feeling?
Feeling amazing. The choreography in episode 5. Like they in interviews, they were saying, we want to top Duel of the Fates, which I know upset some people, but what would you want them to say? We want it to be almost as good as Duel of Fates?
Right.
Which I think this is the best choreography we've seen in live action TV or just any Star Wars TV. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've watched that episode like 3 times.
Yeah, I agree. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to outdo what has already been done. Because also in saying that, you're acknowledging that the incredible choreography of Duel of Fates, but also the prequels in general. Episode 5 was, for me, I mean, I always say that it's like, Star Wars is at its peak when it scares me because Star Wars is not supposed to scare me. Like that is not an emotion I've ever associated with Star Wars until I started reading Star Wars books. And the first one that scared me was Revan because the Eternal Emperor is, then the High Republic. And even though I knew that the Acolyte was the High Republic, I feel like episode 5 was the whiplash that I needed to be like, oh, that's right. I forgot that nothing good ever happens in the High Republic.
That's so
love no one.
And then episode 6 was a very unexpected treat. And, but yeah, I think if we had recorded after episode 5, I think this would be a very sad episode.
Yeah, these both episodes were, I feel like, very polar opposite in pacing and like mood and tone, but so they complement each other so well, almost more than I know episodes 4 and 5 were titled Day and Night, but I feel like these episodes 5 and 6 complemented each other even better, I think, than 4 and 5 did. But well, let's just start with episode 5, because I feel like there's a lot that happened in both episodes that we're going to want to talk about.
And this is your spoiler warning, folks. We are going right into it.
Let's get right into spoilers. I don't know why you're listening to this if you haven't watched The Acolyte, unless you really care about what other people think before you watch something, then you know, that's cool too. I'm glad you're here. But if you don't want to be spoiled, go watch it and come back. I just rewatched the last two episodes because it's been a week since I watched episode 5. So I threw a bunch of notes up. I wanted to note that the beginning of this episode is, I think, now the second time that we've seen Osha, the episode open with Osha waking up somewhere. Because the last time we saw her was, I think, in episode 3, when she wakes up in Sol's ship after, you know, this disaster that happened on Brendok. And this one opens up like on a bird's eye view of Osha, and it's so much almost like it's her out of body conscious, and then she's waking up, and now you're experiencing things from her point of view, which I think has been kind of a consistent in the show. We've seen a lot of things from specifically her point of view, more so I think than any other character, which I think is interesting because the show kind of hid Osha from us in all of the trailers, thinking that May would be, you know, the main character. And it's like, boom, just kidding. There's two of them. I really loved and I saw this on Twitter too, so I can't take complete credit for this, but I love like when Osha walks over and sees this like red dirt that's been spread, and how Star Wars has gotten so creative. And I'm sure we're gonna make so many like Last Jedi parallels, because there's so much imagery and thematic similarities. But I love when Star Wars gets creative with sharing like the bloodshed that's happened somewhere, because it's not a gory franchise. We don't see a lot of blood a lot of times, but I love like in The Last Jedi on Crate, you see the salt is red, so it's, you know, kind of symbolism for the bloodshed that's happening. Same here with this episode.
Yeah, we can talk about this more when we get to episode 6, because there were times where I was like, am I watching The Acolyte, or am I watching The Last Jedi? Love to see those parallels. And also just the way that Osha, you know, she wakes up, we're following her. The last we saw her, she got thrown to the side by the stranger. He was still Darth Teeth at that point, I think. And then she gets up and there's this shot, and it's just a dead Jedi. And it's so thriller. So like, there's a little bit of, this is something we can like, not to jump ahead too far, but there are so many different elements of horror in episode 5. There are jump scares. They play with so many different things in this episode, but that's our opener, and you immediately, it sets the tone. We know this is not going to be a fun episode. And then we immediately jump into the choreography. They do not waste any time getting right into it. And something I really love about this show, especially as more and more of it unfolds, they don't really waste a lot of time keeping us guessing with things. They give the answers to us right away. I know some people wanted there to be an explicit explanation of Cortosis in episode 5, but we got that in episode 6. So what did y'all think about that? Did you know it was Cortosis right away?
I at first thought it was Beskar, like some special Beskar, because that's what I was most familiar with. But once someone said it, I was like, oh yeah, that. And it made sense. But I wasn't like, oh no, what does this mean? I was like, that is so freaking cool. When Yord takes it and he just like is smashing it at the stranger.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm not like a very big, I've not gotten really into any Legends things. So I was like, oh my God, did he just like turn their lightsabers off with the Force? Because I've always been so like, that's a concept that I've always imagined would be so cool in Star Wars, like using the Force to like turn someone's lightsaber off. So that's what I thought it was. I was like, that's so cool. Yeah. Okay.
I think in Legends they say it's like a rule that you're like, it's like one of those rules, but I'm like, Sith don't follow rules.
Right, right. But so I didn't know it was kurtosis until I saw afterwards on Twitter, but I'm like, that is such a cool concept. There is, I guess, theories about what this unknown planet could actually be, because there's, I think, a planet in Legends that has, like, a large supply of kurtosis that's very similar, and it has connections to Darth Plagueis and things. And we'll, I'm sure we'll talk more about Leslie Headland's inspiration behind a lot of these things and how she is incorporating a lot of these Legends concepts into the series, more so than I think any other Star Wars project, which is so cool. But I did want to talk about Yord specifically, because speaking of him being so smart to figure out what that material does and how he can use it against the Stranger. R.I.P. Yord, he went out. But so I remember, I think it was maybe yesterday, a couple days ago, you responded to someone who had said that Yord was like a boring character. And I just wanted to like ask you how you all feel about Yord as a character, because I think, I don't think he's boring. I think it's like he was playing the part of the straight man who is like, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to follow what I've been taught. And he was trying to, I guess he was being like exemplary of what the Jedi Order represents. So I don't know how you all feel about that, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think I didn't resonate with Yord in the way that a lot of my friends did. I obviously love the Yord Horde. I thought that was so fun. It's still going on. And I love the community engagement surrounding the Yord Horde. But I think that, you know, I've gotten a couple comments about, oh, he's a cardboard. He's a piece of cardboard. He's a no personality, whatever. And every time that somebody says that, of course, not everybody's going to resonate with every character the same way. I think I definitely personally had a preference for Jackie. I really, really loved her character. But something that Charlie Barnett said in his like goodbye, sorry, I'm dead video was like, you know, thank you for appreciating Yord and appreciating who he represents, because I think that there are a lot of people in our lives who, you know, have carried themselves with a sense of nobility, and perhaps they do very strictly adhere to the rules that they've set for themselves or the law or whatever it is. And perhaps that can make them seem straight edge and uninteresting, but there are so many people like that, and they're very good natured and they mean well. And you know, sometimes that is a character trait in folks with autism, and that's something I connect with. And so I think and that's not to say Yord is autistic, I don't necessarily characterize him that way, but the way that people, and I think that this is just something that is true of the High Republic in general, every character in this era has been carved out in such a way that they feel fully realized. They feel a lot more real than some other characters in the franchise. And so it was hard for me personally to like make that disconnect. Like, oh, you hate Yord, but like, you know, so many Yords in your life. So if you're talking about a fictional character this way, I feel like you're probably talking about real people like this. And I think that just struck a chord with me, because I have friends who so deeply relate to Yord.
I'm part of the Yord Horde. I adored him. I think Charlie's portrayal was great. I think people think that he's boring, weren't paying attention, because he obviously has some feelings for Osha that are not part of the Jedi Code, that he's trying to fight against, that he's trying so hard to be what the Jedi are supposed to be. And then I love the line in this in episode 5 where he's like, he doesn't like go by the rules of combat. Mm-hmm. And like, it's also him realizing, oh, the rules of combat are out. And that's why he grabs, of course, the helmet and, or not the helmet, the Cortosis. And he starts like, you know, going after him with that. So he's like, okay, the rules have changed. So he adapted. Mm-hmm. It didn't work, obviously, but he did.
Yeah, I think we see that those qualities both in Yord and Jackie a little bit, how that their upbringing in the Jedi Order informs how they are going to act. And this is like also a time period where that is supposed to be mostly peaceful. I mean, if you've read the High Republic books, obviously they are at some kind of wartime with the Nihil. But generally speaking, there hasn't been a lot of conflict within the galaxy that would cause someone like Yord or Jeki to experience, you know, a real world issue where they would have to use combat for real, or like have, you know, this big threat on them. I think they said that this was Jeki's like first real mission, taking her out after, you know, I think to whatever that planet was from
Olega,
yeah, from the first couple episodes. So
I know because of the role play I did last night.
Amazing. But yeah, so like they are inexperienced in the sense that it's like they only have their training from the Jedi. They've never had to apply it before now, at least from my understanding, at least with Jeki, because she's still a younger Padawan. And Yord, I think they said, had only been a Jedi Knight for a few years. So he's younger too. And I don't know, I think it's interesting to see the Jedi from this lens, even though I guess when you start out in the prequels, there are also, you know, there hasn't been huge conflicts.
And like, Qui-Gon Jinn gets killed.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan gets lucky, really.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I saw so many complaints about, oh, all those Jedi, they couldn't take this one guy on. Emperor Palpatine, Mace Windu, and all those Jedi. Kit Fisto. And all those others just go down so quickly. Like, they knew they were going after a Sith Lord. They were prepared. They were ready. Jeki and Yord and the others, they had no idea. And I love this comparison on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's like today seeing a redcoat British enemy, like from the Revolutionary War, running around. Like, what would you think if you saw that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think at least they had the Jedi Order at the time of the prequels had more of an idea or a concept of the Sith. Whereas I think the High Republic era Jedi have been sheltered from that idea because, you know, to them, the Jedi have, or the Sith have been, you know, not around. Now, we see Ki-Adi Mundi say the same thing. Obviously, that's not true. Like, it's just blatantly not true because the Sith have been around. And Ki-Adi Mundi is not a reliable narrator. Like, let's put that out there. But just from what we saw leading up to Duel of the Fates, for example, in The Phantom Menace, like, they had been using the term Sith. Where the first time that we hear the word Sith in this show is in this episode, and it's the stranger, Chimer, that's saying it, you know? And so half of these younger Jedi are probably, what the fuck is a Sith? Because even Osha asks Yord, like, what is he? And Yord's like, I don't know. So there's even, like, that level of being so unprepared for what you're up against that I don't blame them at all for being unprepared, because how could they be?
I also think that I saw a lot of people online say that Yord has no character development. And I think, first of all, that's not true, because he obviously makes a choice in episode 5 to go back because Osha senses that the rest of the group that's still alive is in danger. And he cares for Osha perhaps more than he should. And there are layers to him, but I also think that it's very intentional that he's a character who had so much potential for growth and that it was stunted. I think that was very intentional in the writing. And that's what makes it so tragic, because first of all, not every character has to go through some big character journey in a show in order to have any character growth. But second of all, that is the sobering reality of this threat. We see that in Yord, because that's where we finally see a turning point in him. And we see that in Jeki because of how young she is and the fact that it's her first mission. And I think that, I think, and this is something that my partner has said because he binged all of it in one go, basically. And said that every time we talk about it, he goes back to, like, he feels like the writing has gotten stronger progressively through every episode. And I would agree with that. But I think that there are some lines in both of these episodes, episode 5 and episode 6, that will go down in history as some of the best dialogue in Star Wars history. But specifically, when Sol says to Chimer, she was a child, and he says, you brought her here.
Their exchanges, Sol and Chimer's exchanges in this episode are so good. Like, I have so many notes with just those lines when Sol says, what master hides his face from his pupil? And Chimer says, you tell me. She was a child, you brought her here. Look at you two right back where you started. I've accepted my darkness. What have you done with yours? And I'm just like, what did Sol do? We need to find out.
I can't wait for that. I really think, like, the first couple episodes, especially even episode 3, they're just setting up so much stuff. They have to set up these characters, these worlds, because they aren't any legacy characters there. And yeah, the writing does get better. And I think a lot of us knew the stranger was Chimer. Like, we figured. But, like, the most shocking thing about this episode, it still was a giant shock, was losing those two characters that we loved. And the fact that no one has plot armor just raises the stakes for me. That, like, Sawyer, like, I was terrified. I felt like I was watching a horror movie. Like, Jason's, like, in the forest, you know, coming at the campers, kind of thing. And just the way he, like, takes them out, like, using the force to bring one Jedi into his lightsaber. I was just saying that losing Jackie, and then, like, you don't even have a second to be like, oh my god, she's gone, because there's Yord's gone next. And yeah, it's just brilliant. Uh-huh. It hurts. It does its job.
And it's, like, the way they go out, it's just so, the way he does it is so cold. But I think that is so, and I love it so much. Like, I love this episode. I watched it again. I was like, fuck, it's so good. Because I just love the creativity that, you know, just pulling someone into the saber and just, like, shish kebabbing these two people into, like, it's so crazy to me. And then, and I'll make the, without any, I will make a comparison to Surprise, The Last of Us, without any spoilers, but there are character deaths in The Last of Us, particularly in part 2, that are so, like, I feel like a lot of shows and a lot of media that we watch, when a character dies, like when Qui-Gon dies in The Phantom Menace, it is so dramatic and shocking, and the story gives us time to be shocked and to mourn that character. But what, like, The Last of Us does, and what The Acolyte is doing, is that it's not giving us that time to mourn, but it feels so much more realistic, in a sense that, you know, that's sometimes just how, I mean, obviously people don't get stabbed with lightsabers in our real world, but sometimes deaths are just so sudden and so shocking that there's, like, almost no time to mourn, or no time to, like, really sit with those feelings until, you know, you turn the TV off afterwards and you're done, right? And I just think it's so, it raises the stakes, I think, in a way that is really interesting, because it doesn't give you time to sit with their deaths while you're watching it, and then you have to, like, wait until afterwards. And now I've had time to, like, mourn and be upset that, you know, Jackie, I don't remember if it was Leslie Headland or not, but I saw somewhere that, like, Jackie died a Jedi Knight, because that would have been her trials if she had, you know, succeeded, or if she had gotten out of it alive, like, she would have been knighted, which makes me so sad. But, like, that could have just as easily been Ahsoka. Like, I was just thinking early.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as she lit up that second saber, I was like, Ahsoka, oh my god, two sabers. And that could have just easily been, they would have loved each other. They would have been so cool, so besties, or girlfriends, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, but I, like, don't know. Did you guys? Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Did you guys watch the Clone Wars, like, when it came out? Like, before Rebels?
No.
I don't know.
Because you guys are a bit younger, so. I remember watching the Clone Wars and being like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to Ahsoka? She's not in Revenge of the Sith. All these like other characters who aren't in Revenge of the Sith keep being killed by General Grievous usually, or Darth Maul. Like, some of them are going out. So I was like terrified for this tiny little, like, adorable little Padawan. So yeah, we had like, it's like, what would happen?
Right.
With that.
And there's also a finality to it that we haven't seen in recent, especially in recent Star Wars projects, but also just in general over the course of like the history of Star Wars, because we have Force Ghosts, which obviously we know that Qui-Gon was the first to establish that link and have that as that's a part of the lore. And that's why the Force Ghosts are present in the later stuff, but not in, they wouldn't be a thing in The Acolyte. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, mystical, you know, how can we revive a character? Oh, maybe they went to the world between worlds. Like, there are a lot of ways to resurrect a character in Star Wars. And we don't, and not, it's not just in Star Wars. This is something that we've seen in the MCU. This is something we've seen in a lot of popular franchises. And the decision, and they've talked about this, Leslie talked about this, and Daphne Keane said some really beautiful things about how there was such finality to Jackie's death. You know, there's no coming back from this, and there's no, I think that was all very intentional in the way that we had time to connect with these characters and grow to love these characters so well, and then they're just taken away, but with the, taken away from us, and we don't have time to process that they're gone, because oh my god, they're just dropping like flies. And now this guy, like, is he going to escape? Is he going to kill off literally every other character? Is this the Chimera show now? Like, what's going to happen?
I keep thinking about Ahsoka, the first episode. Sabine is my favorite character. So it's kind of hard to say this, but like when she gets like stabbed in that episode, you're like, oh, those were some vital organs. But then she's like up the next episode, because I understand Bacta can fix a lot of things, but it does lower the stakes when you're like, well, probably nothing's going to happen to her. Nothing's going to happen to Ahsoka. And it, with certain characters are going to survive no matter what. But yeah, but the way Jackie and Yord, they go down, it's down.
It's like kind of an interesting parallel, though, because now that with Ahsoka, with the first season, we get episode 5, which is, you know, her journey with Anakin through the world between worlds. And I think for a lot of people, seeing a live action version of Ahsoka played by Ariana Greenblatt, seeing how young she really was, because it's hard to tell when you're looking at an alien cartoon. Mm-hmm. That was a very sobering thing for a lot of us who, you know, we had already seen Ahsoka in live action at that point, but we'd never seen that part of her life that way. And I think it was so beautifully done that you could, you know, showing.
She should have been at a club.
Yeah.
They all should have been at the club. Her, Jackie, they should not have been out there.
Yeah. So I think to have that as like a recent drawback, and now we have this, and you know, to make those parallels between Jackie and Ahsoka, where Jackie didn't come out of it, that could have just as easily been Ahsoka. And I think that I just think that oftentimes in Star Wars, we don't, there, you know, Star Wars is about hope, so we don't spend a ton of time with grief. But I feel like those two feelings are very intertwined. And well,
it's only called Star Wars. Wars, you know, that part of it is such a big. And yeah, that goes into like, the end of the episode 5, Soul is just walks past their bodies. But then luckily episode 6, we get a little bit more from him.
Yeah, and we got to see Jackie and Yord again.
Oh my gosh, that cut? The way it just cut to her body.
So cold.
The description of Yord is like, Yord's like pale face. is on the ground. I watched it with the descriptive audio, and all like the Kirimar and Osha scenes are like all like, oh, throbbing lightsabers, and you know, all this kind of thing.
Well, that's going to be a whole separate segment in a second.
There's a couple other things I wanted to talk about with episode 5. I feel like we have so much. I know I have a lot to say about episode 6, but I wanted to say I think this whole episode had so many elements that were callbacks to the prequels that made me really happy. Even just like they were not wrong when they said that they were making something akin to Duel of the Fates. Just in this version, it's the apprentice that is killed and not the master with the fight with Jeki, Sol, and Chimer. And then May telling Osha, they've turned you against me. I was like, I've heard that line before. which makes me really happy for Amandla Stenberg, knowing how big of a prequels fan they are. So I thought that was cool. I wanted to mention, because I saw some, discourse about this over on Twitter. So friend of the show, our good friend Maggie Lovett, had an amazing interview with Leslie Headland after episode 6 had just come out, which stay tuned for our episode, our full episode this week, because Maggie is on it and we're going to be talking all about shipping. But she, I guess, had asked Leslie about Chimer's costume and had mentioned that it felt very like feminine coded to her. And I had seen a little bit of backlash on Twitter about that, because if you just read and you don't read the whole interview and you don't see like the full exchange, I can see where someone might think she's just being like an ignorant white person, not realizing that the costume is also like very culturally inspired by, just like all Star Wars costumes are inspired by like samurai and Japanese influence, which are, though in that culture, those things are considered very masculine. But I think two things can exist at the same time, because we're viewing it from like a Western lens. It is more of a feminine style outfit that we've seen on a male antagonist compared to, you know, he's not wearing a full suit of armor like we see with Darth Vader. Or I don't know if you all had thoughts about that.
I'm half Indian, so whenever I watch anything Star Wars with my father, he tells me all which names are like Indian based. He's like, mm-hmm. Padma, mm-hmm. Shmi, Pak. Like Lakshmi, like all the names, and there's a lot, so much Asian influence that honestly I did not consider what he was wearing feminine at all, just because that's just what I was expecting people to wear, because the Star Wars is all about robes, mm-hmm. and billowy cloaks, so I didn't see it that way. What I found most interesting about how he was interacting with Osha and what he was wearing was not his mask, because May never saw his face, while mm-hmm. with Osha, mm-hmm. it's the face. I wasn't really paying attention to the costumes. Is that fact that he literally, well, he shows his entire body to her, really. So it's just such a contrast to what relationship he had with her sister, where she had no idea who he was. He was playing a part whenever he actually interacted with her face to face. So he's wearing a mask both times.
I agree with you, Brooke. I think two things can be true at the same time. I think that there is a lot about Chimer that is more feminine. I don't think it's limited to his outfit. And I think that it is especially important when we're talking about Eastern Asian influences in Star Wars, because that has been, you know, an influence of that was a major influence of George Lucas's when he first wrote A New Hope. So I think that, but there is like a softness to Chimer that we see in episode 6. There's like, and then, you know, he's got his hair pinned back and he's gentler. And we also know from an interview with Amandla Stenberg, they very intentionally played Osha as the more masculine of the two twins. And they talk about how they wore like a different scent depending on which character they were shooting at, and that Osha's character was just more masculine and like very intentionally so. And so I think there is juxtaposition there.
I think it's just the phrasing could be different with,
yeah,
it's not feminine, but it's billowy and.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like what Osha's wearing was really giving me Last Jedi Rey vibes.
Yeah.
Like Rey, yeah, and everything like, absolutely, that. But yeah, yeah, it was just in his mannerisms, the way he was talking to her, the way he lowered his head more.
Mm-hmm.
And the eye contact, it was just like very different than he was last episode.
Yeah. I feel very gentle, very honest. And I know that there is a great debate as to whether or not he was manipulating her. I don't think so. First of all, Leslie Headland said he wasn't. And second of all, I genuinely, but like, I think that there is intention in the way that Chimere approached May versus how he approaches Osha. I think that, I mean, we can have a whole section about this if we want to talk about it, because I want to talk about it.
I think my initial thought, and then reading what Leslie Headland had said, that she doesn't view it, or it was not intended to look like it was manipulation, because I think manipulation, there has to be a level of like knowing that what you're doing is, I guess, not right, and you're manipulating someone into doing something that you want. But I feel like for Chimere, he, you know, obviously he is putting on a different mask for Osha than he did for May, because he never let May see his face, at least as the master. And when he was, you know, the Chimere character, it was a different, he just acted different in with May than we see in episode 6 with Osha. I think he is giving Osha the space that he thinks that she needs to be able to like uncover these truths about herself that she, you know, he wants her to understand. I don't think that it's a manipulative tactic, because that would imply that it's not genuine. And I think that there is a level of him interacting with her that is genuine, because, you know, if he is really trying to recruit her to his cause, he has to fully believe in his cause, right? And if he's fully believing in his cause, he isn't lying to Osha, right? Because if you don't fully believe, I guess if you don't fully believe in what you're saying, that would strike me more as manipulating someone, because you know deep down that it's like it's wrong or bad. But I think from his lens, and I remember hearing like Adam Driver, when he would talk about how he portrayed Kylo Ren, he never viewed, you know, Kylo Ren never viewed himself as the villain or the bad guy, right? Because, and a lot of, I think, villains, especially in a lot of these Star Wars projects and Marvel projects or whatever have you, we have gotten a lot of sympathetic villains that have like motives behind what they're doing that, like,
understandable. You understand it, but you're,
yes,
you don't have to agree with it, but you understand their thinking and their theories, and you're 100% right. He believes what he's saying, and right. Just when you were talking, it made me think back the first time that Osha and Chimere, like, she was pretending to be May, and he drops the veil with her,
mm-hmm,
like
immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting. He immediately goes like, kind of to like how he is in episode 6. So he's not lying to her.
Oh, ever, my really. God. Okay. Rewatching this, isn't cover it? To cover is going to be so interesting.
Isn't wow. it? I cannot wait to watch every episode back to back to back to back. I have a flight to California right after, and I'm like, that's what I'm doing with my flight. Just gonna.
No, I think that there's truth to that, and I also think that there is a certain level of honesty that he has to have with her, because she watched that massacre. She saw him unmasked. Mm-hmm. She saw him do these horrific things, which they were horrific and were not. Nobody on this panel and nobody on the internet is saying that Chimer is a good person. However, I think whatever drew him to her on Allega, that has been, I think he, there are a couple of like universal truths for Chimer, right? Like from the start of the show, his apprentice is losing faith in his plan. From the get-go, she has questions. She's like, I don't know if I'm fully into this. I don't know if I agree with the things that you're asking me to do. I don't trust you. Why should I be doing this? The second thing is that he immediately senses the unease, the tension, the unresolved emotions in Osha that she has abandoned because she's ashamed of whatever caused her to leave the order, but she's also ashamed because that's the life that she chose, and she, in her, from her mind, she failed because she was unable to let go of these strong feelings that she had. So I think with all those things combined, and the fact that he's unmasked by Jackie and then has no choice but to be front and center, okay, yeah, he has to be honest with her. Osha doesn't trust him. Why would she trust him? He killed all these people. He wants to kill her father figure because he's a Jedi and because he's probably done some things that are not so good. If there's any hope of them working together, he has to be honest with her because she already doesn't trust him. So the whole manipulating her, I don't think would work. Genuinely.
Do you think it's because he's like, okay, I tried this with May. I was masked. I was secretive. Probably didn't give her a lot of answers. She was terrified of me, obviously. I need to try a different route with Osha?
I don't know if it's that or more just showing how they're identical, but they're completely different people. I am sort of pulling that from, you know, I've read fan fictions this week. I've done my like RP thing. Like, so I've been able to adapt my perspective a little bit about how I feel about this ship specifically and their relationship and also these characters. But I think that, I mean, Chimer is definitely older than he looks, like a lot older than he looks. And also he seems to have like this understanding of the Force that I would even argue rivals that we've seen from some other Darksiders before. Like, he seems to be a very well-rounded character who has been around long enough to learn a lot about the way that the Force works and the universe works. And so, and I also think that because Leslie was so inspired by Kreia, who, if you haven't played KOTOR 2, is known as one of the most compelling video game villains, not just in Star Wars, but of all time, because her perspective of the Force is very unique and unlike anything we see from any of the other villains. I am inclined to believe that Chimer is probably similarly well acquainted with all areas of the Force. So I think it's less him trying a different approach and more him approaching them differently because they're just two completely different people.
Yeah, and I think we'll find out more about who Chimer is and his, you know, motives behind. Like, I want to know, was he on Brendok for some reason? Or
yeah, because he implies burns on his arms. Where did he get his burns from?
I think it will make more sense why he's acting this way towards Osha versus May when we find out more about him. We obviously know that he knows what happened on Brendok, and I think because of that, he didn't have to give May any version of the truth, because May was there to, you know, have her version of the truth. And I think just the way that their dynamic worked, we don't know how long they've been working together, we don't know how long they've known each other. Obviously, she didn't know the identity behind the mask, But I think it's more of just he senses that they are different and they have different needs and different motives and different desires. And I think he was, I feel like if I say that he was exploiting May, I would have to say the same for Osha. And because we don't have that same backstory now that we're having, you know, his introduction to Osha as we did with, like, we don't have that same thing with May. It just, to me, I feel like he was using May more as a pawn than he is approaching it with Osha. But I think maybe he's learned, like, I can't, obviously this tactic is not working. Let me try something else. But not in the way where it's like, I'm going to purposely be manipulating this person. It's just like, I understand that this person has a different set of needs and I will supply that for her. To obviously, like, he is, I'm sure that even though he's, you know, if he's not manipulating her, he still has some sort of end goal that he wants to get to. He's trying to recruit her. He's trying to get, you know, I think he needs to have her be able to see the truth of whatever happened on Brendok, because we only have right now her perspective from episode 3, because it was mostly from her point of view. I think once we get more of a well-rounded story of what happened, his motives will be a lot more clear, if that makes sense.
Oh, when you're speaking point of view, it's so interesting. We just got like a little audio flashback of May's when she was taking the test, which I thought was great. I don't know, like, if we're going to see from the Jedi's point of view, and then will we also see what the truth is too? Because there's so many sides of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is a storytelling tactic. And I know that there is, I want to say it's a Kurosawa film that is...
Rashomon.
Yes. It has that same, like, three, it's telling the same story from three different perspectives. And like, what is that movie, The Last Duel, that came out recently?
Yeah,
it has the same storytelling beats where it's the same thing retold three times from three different perspectives. So I mean, with only two episodes left, I don't know if they're going to do it exactly in the same way, but I feel like that's what they're leading towards, is that we have, you know, Osha's point of view, we're gonna get May's point of view, and then we're gonna get what is, like, and The Last Jedi did it too, right? With, you know, Ben's point of view, Luke's point of view, and then was the closest to the truth. So I don't know. I hopefully we'll get more by the end of season.
Yeah. And I know Leslie has said that season one is a self-contained story. But I don't know. We can theorize on this, but like I don't think this is the type of situation where the Acolyte is like an anthology series and the next season is going to be entirely new cast. I think, from where I'm standing, I think Osha is the Acolyte, the titular Acolyte, and I think this where we're at now, there's still a lot of things to wrap up. But I will say, I felt the same about the Fallout series. And at the end of the last episode of the first season, I was like, how are they going to wrap everything up? And they totally did in the perfect, most perfect way. So I have full confidence. But I do think that whatever this arc is going to be, it leaves Chimera and Osha as like the last people standing. That's my prediction and my hope. But I think we could, because then we could go more into Sith-y things in the next season.
Or maybe not even Sith, the place in between, because Chimera says, I'm what you would call, doesn't call him a self.
That's true. That's true.
Which is interesting. So even though he's doing very Sith-y things, like murder.
I'm curious to see, because I think a lot of people have theorized, including myself, that Chimera is not the, you know, the full Sith behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. I think there is, and I think Leslie Headland had said that we're going to see at least two Sith. And that could be just like a play on, oh, you know, Osha is going to become a Sith by the end of the show. But with two episodes left, And I think there is, I can't remember his name now. I had it written down somewhere, but there's one more actor that was on like the cast list that we haven't seen yet.
I know who you're talking about.
I wish
we thought it might be the stranger. We were looking at his hand and then looking when it was episode 4, my friends and I were looking at the cast list and their hands and trying to see like whose hand is that? But yeah, it's a very Sith apprentice thing to do to get another apprentice so you can defeat your master, because like that's what Dooku was trying to do with Asajj, really. And Palpatine saw that. He's like, get rid of her. She's got to go. So.
Yes. Oh, David Harewood is the actor's name. It's this article I just pulled up to find his name. It says, the Acolyte rumor, David Harewood joins the cast in a small role. So I would not be surprised if by the at the end of the show we see Chimaire reporting to whoever this bigger Sith is. So I think that is kind of like a go around of him being like.
Or he could be the senator that Vernestra was hearing about that was anti-Jedi.
This is true. This is true. I was thinking that as well. There are two options. Yes. I feel like the way that Chimaire said, you know, some might call me a Sith, feels a lot like he is not yet, you know, he does not yet have a Darth title or a Sith title because he's still working towards it. And he has to, because we know that the rule of two is kind of bullshit because they're always plotting and planning and finding their own apprentices to like beat out their master. So I don't know. It could be someone else, or maybe they're saving that for a following season. Hopefully we get another season. I could see them kind of wrapping up the storyline from this season, but then teasing like what is to come next season kind of deal.
Yeah, leaving it open enough so if there is a second season. But she's definitely going to close out the mystery. Like what happened the witches and everything, and what did Saul do, and why is he feeling guilty?
Yeah, there's I think like one clip left that we saw from, I don't know if it was the one of the original trailers or one of the episode previews, of like Kel Naka like striking at Torben, and I'm just like, I can't wait to see that because I feel like it's going to be so intense. I think the witches are going to have something to do with that, like turning these Jedi against each other, because we saw that she could just, Mother Anasaya could just take over someone's mind like that. And I don't know. I'm so intrigued with what is going to happen in these next two episodes that, yeah. And I just want to know what Saul did, and I didn't mention this, but something I noticed rewatching episode 5 was when he is getting ready to, he's talking to Chimaire, and he has his saber out. There's like a light saber split, like half of his face is blue and the other half is red, and it's when they're discussing like, I've shown, you know, my true self to you, like, when are you, or I've accepted my darkness, when are you? I think it's around that same time.
I think a lot of people are like, oh, he's a Sith, or Vanestra's a Sith. I don't think they're Sith. I think they're Jedi who probably made some bad decisions. And they aren't Sith if they regret their decisions, which Saul obviously does. Look,
yes.
If he was a Sith, he did something really bad, he would be like, dark side, baby. That's all the dark side. He feels so much guilt. It's the, also the acting.
That performance. Episode.
I hope he gets like
so good.
All the awards. I have a question for y'all, because I'm not sure about this. When do you think Saul realized May was May?
It's a good question. I because they kind of left it a mystery, because he, when May comes up to him, he asks, where is she? Where's your sister? He doesn't say, where's May? And so I'm like, does he have a sense of who it is from the beginning? But then he goes through kind of episode six, seemingly like he knows, he thinks that that's Osha. And then it's only until I think like Basil starts kind of acting up that he realizes Basil. Who it is. So I don't know. I feel like it was left kind of open-ended. I feel like he, because he's like, wow, I can't believe I couldn't sense that Chimer was a Sith. He probably, I would think that he would have his like radar kind of on, like his force radar, whatever you want to call it, a little more open after that point, because he's like, I can't let that happen again. And so I would assume.
So clouded. I'm sorry.
It, yeah, no, I would
I'm sorry,
assume.
Sorry, you paused. Like,
oh, sorry. I just it's assumed that like he would be a little bit more open so that didn't happen again, but he could also still be, you're right, he could still be clouded by his grief, by everything else.
Yeah, I was on the fence about it. I think it's either he knew from the beginning, because there was a lot of like perfect timing instances while they were on the ship interacting with each other that was like, oh, you know, she almost went in for the kill but missed it, or oh, you know, like, but no, I think if he was clouded by grief, which is a very real possibility given everything, I think the moment that would have convinced him would have been the exchange about Pip, because May does not care about Pip, but Osha loved that droid. So,
oh, she could be so mad. Factory reset.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's gonna make Osha go to the dark side. It's not gonna do anything that Kamar says. It's gonna be that Pip got factory reset. It. She's like, nope. Give me the red lightsaber.
Yeah, that's gonna be it. We talked about a lot. I want to, I guess, focus a little bit on just all of the stuff on said unknown planet that apparently is not Octo, even though in my heart it is just a different island in Octo. And because, I mean, I'm a big Last Jedi girly. I know Sawyer and I are big, like, Reylo girlies. And obviously the fandom has kind of exploded in the last couple weeks, seeing, drawing these parallels between, you know, Rey and Kylo and Osha and Chimer. I think whether or not you ship those characters or not in a romantic sense, there's still a lot of interesting parallels you can draw, mm-hmm. especially with episode six. There are a lot of parallels to The Last Jedi, a lot of visual similarities as well that you can draw that are so interesting to me and interesting that, like, I don't know. I feel like The Last Jedi was so divisive that I haven't seen quite as much. Well, I've seen a speed run of the same kind of discourse, but not from like the Fandom Menace, but I also have a very nicely curated Twitter feed that I have blocked so many pages that I don't see a lot of that. I've seen a lot of other interesting discourse, but I would love to know your thoughts about, did you immediately draw those parallels with The Last Jedi watching it, or did you, you know, have to go on Twitter afterwards and start seeing them and you're like, oh, because I know, like, I saw a lot, but then going back and just seeing what other people were saying on Twitter, I was like, I need to watch this episode again because there's even more that I missed from before.
Yeah. No, immediately when the episode started, I was like, what am I watching? Am I watching The Last Jedi? And we've seen plenty of homages to the sequels. I think we talked about, Candace and I co-hosted a space right after the episode a few days ago, and I think I said something to the effect of, like, we've seen, you know, Snoke heads in laboratories, we've seen, you know, Project Necromancer, we've seen very direct and explicit references to the sequels, but this is the first time that we've seen any other Star Wars project truly paying homage to The Last Jedi specifically. And it was so artful. It was the scenery, it was the costuming, it was the dialogue and physical interaction between Osha and Kainir. And the whole time I was like, I am watching a fan fiction unfold on screen. No, I noticed it immediately, and I thought it was Octo, and I think Leslie has said it's not Octo, and that's fine. You know, I think we've decided it's probably this Baldemnic planet from the Plagueis novel, which is so cool. But I really like the theory that Baldemnic is to the Sith, Octo to the Jedi, because there's definitely more islands than we saw Luke living on. You know, I definitely think there's some space in the lore for it to be the same world, just utilized very differently between the Jedi and the Sith, especially because there's so much history, like Octo, you know, there's that mural in the caves and like so much ancient history about Force users. I don't know, like, I think that they could be the same planet, but Leslie at least did say
Sith porgs.
Just little grumpy porgs. Sorry. That just came into my mind, I had to say it.
No, you're good. No, but that's like, you know, in my, Leslie did say that there, it was very intentionally supposed to get you to think of Octo, and it did. It looked like Octo. I've been there. I was like, like, Billy was like, that's not Octo. I'm like, no, it is, though. Like, it looks like it, but fine. It's not, whatever. In my heart, it is.
I just want to say, like, as we're talking about this, too, we've referenced things that Leslie Headland has said about this series, and I kind of just say it's, like, a nice breath of fresh air to have a creative in Star Wars be so open and, like, transparent about the intention behind certain choices, because I think in recent years we've gotten so used to, and I love Dave Filoni, I think he has a spot in Lucasfilm and has, you know, makes awesome things, but he's always very like, I don't know, it's up to your interpretation, like, what do you think about it? And it's just like, no, I want to know what your intention behind this thing was. And so I'm really glad to see someone like Leslie be like, oh, I'm glad you noticed that. And I will say, I mean, I love Rian Johnson. He did that a lot, too, when people would ask him direct things. He would be like, oh, yeah, this was my intention behind this thing. And I would always feel validated because I'm like, great, because I thought that same thing, too. But I don't know. I just think it's kind of nice.
I'm not a Reylo. And so I didn't really, other than Osha's gray, shoulderless outfit, that was the only Rey thing I got. Because Reylo, they're like babies. They're both like so like, I don't know, like, so I saw on Twitter, like, Kylo has no Riz. He is Rizless. Well, Kamar has all the Riz. And I mean, like, Osha just has been through the ringer. She's a bit older than Rey. Just trauma after trauma, which Rey has been through trauma too. But I don't know. I can see where people can see it, but I'm personally not seeing it. But I am shipping Kamar and Osha, which people are shocked because I don't find Reylo to be my cup of tea. But like, I do love me some enemies to lovers.
Yeah. I have sat on this for the past few days, and I love Reylo. Reylo is very personal to me. It's something that's gotten me through a lot of difficult times in my life, and I think it will always, in one way or another, be my favorite ship. But first of all, we are seeing in real time the impact of having women write in these previously male-dominated spaces, because as much as I love Reylo, a lot of what I love about Reylo is the artistry that has been a byproduct of Reylo. We've had so many fan fictions be published into novels because of Reylo. There's been so many wonderful artists, so many wonderful costumers. There's just such, Reylo is just more to me than what we, you know, if I were to sit down and watch the three movies and go, oh yeah, that was a cohesive relationship. It's not. It there were opportunities for it to be more than it was. But a lot of why Raylo is special to me is fan fiction, expanding upon the stories in, you know, personal ways and whatever. I, first of all, to have Leslie, who admitted in this interview she did this week that she has written fan fiction and that Oshamir was directly inspired by the fan fiction she used to write. And you, like, there were so many instances in episode 6 where I, because I watched it with Billy because he had caught up, where I would turn to him and be like, was that an innuendo? Was that, like, this felt very, like,
his lightsaber. It,
literally, no, but the way, like, not even talking about him literally stripping in front of her, being completely naked, even though we didn't see it. But
she
the things that he says, oh, she did. She went back for seconds.
She was looking.
But no, seriously, like, there are so many exchanges between these two characters during this episode, far more explicitly than Raylo ever got. And I do think that The Last Jedi was very intimate. And I do think that those scenes between Rey and Kylo in The Last Jedi are indicative of the relationship they could have had. But this, it was written by a woman. It was written by a woman.
He says,
it was written by...
Oh, he Go says ahead. Desire. To your point, Sawyer. He says desire. That is mm-hmm. said out loud in this conversation, which is so insane to yeah. me.
Yeah, he does. And it's like, you know, just every little thing. Like, it didn't, I think I have fallen victim to a lot of characters that I tend to ship, and then they're very up in the air as to whether or not it's actually going to be a canon relationship or not. And I didn't have to think twice about it here because it was so every single scene. Am I making this up? If I'm making this up, I will edit it out of this recording. But I'm pretty sure that we read
it's all there.
That there was. Well, no. Yes. I know that I'm not making that up.
Oh, sorry.
I'm
pretty sorry. Pretty
sure. No.
I was like, am I making like this I whole remember, ship up?
no. I'm. No. I feel like I remember there being discussion of there being an intimacy coordinator on set for The Acolyte. I think they did say that. And I think people were very confused. Like, why is there an intimacy coordinator? And an intimacy coordinator can be there just for any physical interaction between two characters. But I think it's very clear now that that is not the only reason why they had an intimacy coordinator on set. And so to have that click, and then there's an interview from a couple weeks ago where Manny is like, we got very close physically and emotionally, and then Amandla was like, why the fuck would you say that?
The look they give him, like, shut your mouth. Shut your mouth, Manny.
And I thought, because Amandla is my age and very much in and gay, but also like in tune with meme culture and fandom culture because she's a part of fandom culture. Like I thought that they were just like, oh, I don't want them to ship our characters because that's not like I don't want them to get the wrong idea. No, that was obviously like, dude, you're not supposed to be talking about this
don't
right now.
Spoil anything.
But I think I saw a tweet today that was like, oh, Manny Jacinto went to the Tom Holland School of Lying.
Oh my God. Honestly.
To have that episode and go, okay, wait a second. No, actually this ship is intentional. Like this is real. This is going to, they're not going to abandon this. This is going to go somewhere before this story ends. And then the very next day to have an interview with Leslie Headland go, oh yeah, you're supposed to ship them. I ship them. This is an intentional relationship. Validating.
Shipping is such a big part of the female fandom experience that like, I've talked to this about like to a lot of friends and something I've noticed in Star Wars live action or even animated. Majority of romances that do happen end up with a baby. So are they only having this romantic relationship? So we get Luke and Leia. So then Hera has a little Kanan to, you know, walk around with. And it just feels like those are the only reasons to have romance. And again, you're in a Star Wars. You're in a war. A lot of emotions in that. A lot of emotions, which are going to lead you to one another emotion.
Which yeah. I think, like, to me, I guess going back to the Reylo parallels that I saw, it was more because Osha, Rey, Chimera, and Kylo are all very different characters. I do see some similarities with Osha and Rey, but like Candace, like you said, they are Osha's older than Rey. Obviously, they're both more experienced just in life things. Not necessarily just like, but also training, because Chimera's obviously had some sort of formal Sith training and Osha had formal Jedi training. But I feel like the intimacy that we saw in episode 6 was very resonant of the intimacy that we saw between Rey and Ben in The Last Jedi. And The Last Jedi was a little bit more coy with their I guess like innuendos with the lightsabers, but like the throne room scenes, even before you get to like the throne room battle, is like so cloaked with like sexual comparisons with just how things are shot, lightsabers just being inherently like phallic kinds of things. And I think that the Acolyte is like a more mature, elevated version of that. And so I think that is a lot of what I see in like the Reylo comparisons, not necessarily how the relationship is. I think a lot of people that ship Reylo have latched on to Chimera and Osha because it, you know, the creatives and the actors have been very transparent and very supportive of this ship that we did not see quite in the same way that we did when the sequel trilogy was coming out. We never saw Adam and Daisy doing interviews together. They were always separated when they were doing interviews. And so I felt like we were always kind of being like gaslit that like, no, Ray was not a real thing or whatever kind of deal. And so it is, I think it's validating to a lot of people who feel a little bit slighted by how Reylo was handled in the sequel trilogy, now coming to a new similar enemies to lovers, seemingly is the direction it's going, ship, and feeling actually validated by the source material and validated by the people that are creating that thing, that like they're not crazy for feeling this way. And so like maybe more so than, like what Sawyer said, like more so not the ship itself, but like the feelings and the artistry around all of that.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons I didn't get onto the Reylo boat was because it could be read as platonic. It could be read as romantic until the end of Rise of Skywalker. And it felt like, well, you're supposed to interpret this relationship either way you want, but I wanted something definite. Yeah. So, like, I wasn't even sure, like, the Force Awakens, if they were cousins or not. You know, like, that kind of thing.
And I think that Reylo, what Reylo, like, everybody has their opinion about how The Rise of Skywalker ended. It's not my favorite, but I understand it and I accept it and it's whatever. But I think that, because really, all I wanted is for them to kiss. And they did. So it's fine. I think that Reylo, what it suffered from the most was that the entire creative team behind the sequel trilogy wanted so badly to keep Rey's identity and who she belonged to such a secret. And because they were so intent on keeping that a secret until the last film, that's why, you know, there was that room for them to be related. Exactly. So I think that because of that, because they were so focused on hiding Rey and who she was, there was no room for them to be like, oh yeah, it's definitely like, I think if Rian Johnson had made the third film, we might have gotten some more explicitly like Reylo stuff. But
I saw an interview I think it was just today, just a snippet of J.J. Abrams saying that Kylo and Rey are like have a sibling dynamic, but it also can be read as romantic. And it kind of like hurt
this
my brain.
This is not Game of Thrones.
Yes, I sent this to my friend Arzu, my co-host, who is a diehard Raylo. And she's like, she was very upset and she's not surprised. She says, there's much as a brother-sister thing between Rey and Kylo Ren as there is a romantic thing. So it's not like literally a sexual romantic thing, but more of they're bound together in this movie in a crazy spiritual way that again felt romantic to me. JJ, you shouldn't be feeling romantic to someone who you have a brother-sister thing with. Just saying.
That's so interesting.
And traumatizing. But that's why I think, like, Karima and Osha, like, it's so much easier to get on this boat, this ship, mm-hmm. than, say, Raylo. So that's why I'm saying some people I know. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of friends who are, they're not anti-Raylo. They're just like, not my tea, you know. But they're on this ship 110%. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just How because, like you're saying. Be? Yeah, you're just saying that it's so intentional. There isn't, like, any doubt what this what they're saying with this dynamic. And that's
and then
so refreshing.
Manny with the fan art. Manny posting the Oshamir fan
Amanda
art. And Amanda and commenting with the hearts. It's like, okay, so they both are on board with the ship. And I can't even recall the last time, or like if ever, at least in the ships that I've been a part of, where both parties and the creator were like, oh, yeah, yeah. No, this is ship it. Do it. Like, please. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, in Rebels, I really love Zeb and Callus. And Steve Blum, he would, who voiced Zeb, he mm-hmm. would like fan art. He would say that, oh, they're not in, like, Ahsoka because they're, like, off raising the kids, you know, kind of thing. But, like, Dave never, like, definitely said anything. He's not, you know, willing to be like, yeah, they're together. So it's nice when everyone's on board.
Yeah, it feels really nice when everyone is kind of like on the same page. And I feel like it feels so validating to, you know what? You know, a ship is going to be good when it causes panic in the streets on Twitter. I'm just going to say, because, you know, it's funny from like, and like Sawyer and I have been taught like toying with the idea of like doing a whole Yap Sesh episode about like the great Raylo wars of the sequel trilogy, because like there's so many layers to it. And I feel like in this week alone, I don't want to get into it too deep because I'll just get mad. But like just in the last couple of days, we've like sped run through all of the talking points of why this enemies to lovers ship is bad, from he's manipulating her, he's a bad person, and if you ship this thing, then you're a bad person. All the way down to Leslie Headland is not a real lesbian because she made a hetero ship, which is all things that, you know, Raylos have heard before, because there are POC Raylos and there are queer Raylos, but there were a lot of backlash to that being like, oh, well, you must be lying about being gay, because if you're gay, you would never ship those two characters. And it's like, what does that have to do with anything?
Do you know how many straight women ship gay men, like an archive of our own? If you look up like all the back in the day, it was called slash fic. Mm-hmm. How many were like, I want these two men to kiss? Like shipping doesn't mean
like
that.
How fan fiction started, right? Like Star Trek fanfic.
Oh yeah, Kurt and Spock fanfic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So two dudes, one lady wanting two dudes to kiss.
Thank you.
Like
for sharing
I understand,
opinion.
I guess, when you have a show that is being led by a lesbian woman, having I guess going into it with some sort of expectation that there will be that kind of representation in the show, since we haven't gotten really that in Star Wars. And we have seen some of that representation with Osha and Mae's mothers obviously are a couple. Mm-hmm. I think more, it wasn't quite explicit, but like it was explicitly stated. We didn't see them like kiss or anything as far as I can remember.
They had babies together.
They literally had children together, right?
Yeah.
And then even in this last episode, when Chimera is talking to Osha about Deki, it very gives the implication that is like, I can sense that like maybe you guys had a little crush on each other, but she's a Jedi, so it could never go that far because of her, you know, oath against not forming attachments because she's a Jedi. Like, I thought that, I guess for me, maybe because I am queer, so like I can read things more through a queer lens, yeah, maybe more so than someone else. But like, to me, it was very clear that that was implied, that she was, you know, interested in Deki in more than a just a platonic sense. But I don't know.
She said she wanted to get a drink with her, you know.
Yeah.
Take her out to the bar. But and that goes into another innuendo where he's like, why do you love people who won't go as deep as you? And I'm like,
okay. I know. Oh my God. When he said that, I was like, am I imagining this? Did this happen?
Well, that when he all the scenes. I'm like,
when he said to Osha, well, if you're not going to join me, I'd like to put my clothes back on. I was like, what did he say? He is a naked man right now in the water, and he said, if you're not going to join me, if that is not explicitly not platonic, I don't know what is, man.
I don't know what to expect anymore from this show, but I mean that in the best way. And yeah. My sincere hope is that on episode 8, they're like, surprise, there's actually 8 more episodes. But I know that's not going to happen.
Here's like the next 2 episodes are like an hour long.
Oh, yes, please. And we need that season 2 confirmation. No, the only thing that I really want to say is let more women write Star Wars, please, for the love of all that is holy. This is so refreshing, and it feels like, this is like a fully realized, even in just one episode, this feels like more fully fleshed out, believable romance than anything I've seen in Star Wars previously. So please. Please let women write Star Wars.
Also have writing rooms.
Mm-hmm. Also have writing rooms, for real. Oh my God.
But anyway, I think that bus just about covers it for episodes 5 and 6. We'll be back at it with episodes 7 and 8 right after the finale, or the week after the finale. But Candace, thank you so much for joining us. I love seeing everyone's perspective on this show, and it's so great that we have this podcast to talk to people about it. And yeah, thanks so much for coming on. Do you want to like plug anything? Are you working on anything cool coming up?
I'm going to be on a panel in San Diego Comic-Con. If anybody's at San Diego, it's going to be on Friday. It's about unpacking female characters in the nerdom. So very excited.
Very
my
cool.
First San Diego Comic Con.
Nice.
Break a leg. That sounds so cool. That I really want to go to San Diego Comic Con one of these days. But
yeah, it's been on my bucket list forever.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Congrats.
Thanks.
Cool. I think that's about it. We'll be back with another re-app, and to make sure to stay tuned for our next full episode coming up this Wednesday. We had an awesome chat with our friend Maggie Lovett about shipping, which is perfect timing to talk about that. And I guess we'll yap with y'all again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.